Chapter 53. Mrs. Tibbs was, beyond all dispute, the most tidy, fidgety, thrifty little personage that ever inhaled the smoke of London, and the house of Mrs. Tibbs was, decidedly, the neatest in all Great Coram Street. The area and the area steps, and the street door steps, and the brass handle, and the door plate, and the knocker, and the fan light, were all as clean and bright, as indefatigable whitewashing, and hearthstoning, and scrubbing and rubbing, could make them. The wonder was, that the brass door plate, with the interesting inscription Mrs. Tibbs, apostrophe had never caught fire from constant friction, so perseveringly was it polished. There were neat safe-looking blinds in the parlor windows, blue and gold curtains in the drawing room, and spring roller blinds, as Mrs. Tibbs was wont in the pride of her heart to boast, all the way up. Apostrophe the bell lamp in the passage looked as clear as a soap bubble. You could see yourself in all the tables, and French polish yourself on any one of the chairs. The banisters were beeswaxed, and the very stair wires made your eyes wink, they were so glittering. Mrs. Tibbs was somewhat short of stature, and Mr. Tibbs was by no means a large man. He had, moreover, very short legs, but, by way of indemnification, his face was peculiarly long. He was to his wife what the zero is in 90. He was of some importance with her. He was nothing without her. Mrs. Tibbs was always talking. Mr. Tibbs rarely spoke. But, if it were at any time possible to put in a word, when he should have said nothing at all, he had that talent. Mrs. Tibbs detested long stories, and Mr. Tibbs had one, the conclusion of which had never been heard by his most intimate friends. It always began, I recollect when I was in the Volunteer Corps, in 1806, apostrophe, but, as he spoke very slowly and softly, and his better half very quickly and loudly, he rarely got beyond the introductory sentence. He was a melancholy specimen of the storyteller. He was the wandering Jew of Joe Millerism. Mr. Tibbs enjoyed a small independence from the pension list about 43L15s. 10D a year. His father, mother, and five interesting scions from the same stock, drew a like sum from the revenue of a grateful country, though for what particular service was never known. But, as this said independence was not quite sufficient to furnish two people with all the luxuries of this life, it had occurred to the busy little spouse of Tibbs that the best thing she could do with a legacy of 700L would be to take and furnish a tolerable house somewhere in that partially explored tract of country which lies between the British Museum and a remote village called Somerstown for the reception of boarders. Great Coram Street was the spot pitched upon. The house had been furnished accordingly, two female servants and a boy engaged, and an advertisement inserted in the morning papers, informing the public that six individuals would meet with all the comforts of a cheerful musical home in a select private family, residing within 10 minutes' walk of everywhere. Answers out of number were received, with all sorts of initials. All the letters of the alphabet seemed to be seized with a sudden wish to go out boarding and lodging. Voluminous was the correspondence between Mrs. Tibbs and the applicants, and most profound was the secrecy observed. E apostrophe didn't like this. I apostrophe couldn't think of putting up with that. I O. U apostrophe didn't think the terms would suit him. And G. R apostrophe had never slept in a French bed. The result, however, was that three gentlemen became inmates of Mrs. Tibbs' house, on terms which were agreeable to all parties. Apostrophe in went the advertisement again, and a lady with her two daughters proposed to increase not their families, but Mrs. Tibbs. Charming woman, that Mrs. Mapleson. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mrs. Tibbs, as she and her spouse were sitting by the fire after breakfast. The gentlemen having gone out on their several avocations. Charming woman, indeed. Apostrophe apostrophe repeated little Mrs. Tibbs, more by way of soliloquy than anything else, for she never thought of consulting her husband. And the two daughters are delightful. We must have some fish today. They'll join us at dinner for the first time. apostrophe, Mr. Tips placed the poker at right angles with the fire shovel, and essayed to speak, but recollected he had nothing to say. The young ladies, apostrophe continued Mrs. T, have kindly volunteered to bring their own piano. Apostrophe, Tips thought of the volunteer story, but did not venture it. A bright thought struck him, it's very likely, apostrophe, said he. Pray don't lean your head against the paper, apostrophe, interrupted Mrs. Tips, and don't put your feet on the steel fender, that's worse. Apostrophe, Tips took his head from the paper, and his feet from the fender, and proceeded. It's very likely one of the young ladies may set her cap at young Mr. Simpson, and you know a marriage, apostrophe, a what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, shrieked Mrs. Tips. Tips modestly repeated his former suggestion. I beg you won't mention such a thing, apostrophe, said Mrs. T. A marriage, indeed, to rob me of my boarders, no, not for the world. Apostrophe, Tips thought in his own mind that the event was by no means unlikely, but, as he never argued with his wife, he put a stop to the dialogue by observing it was time to go to business. Apostrophe, he always went out at 10 o'clock in the morning and returned at 5 in the afternoon with an exceedingly dirty face and smelling moldy. Nobody knew what he was or where he went, but Mrs. Tips used to say with an air of great importance that he was engaged in the city. The Miss Maplesons and their accomplished parent arrived in the course of the afternoon in a hackney coach, and accompanied by a most astonishing number of packages. Trunks, bonnet boxes, muff boxes and parasols, guitar cases, and parcels of all imaginable shapes, done up in brown paper, and fastened with pins, filled the passage. Then, there was such a running up and down with the luggage, such scampering for warm water for the ladies to wash in, and such a bustle, and confusion, and heating of servants, and curling irons, as had never been known in Great Coram Street before. Little Mrs. Tips was quite in her element, bustling about, talking incessantly, and distributing towels and soap, like a head nurse in a hospital. The house was not restored to its usual state of quiet repose until the ladies were safely shut up in their respective bedrooms, engaged in the important occupation of dressing for dinner. Are these gals handsome? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Simpson of Mr. Septimus Hicks, another of the boarders, as they were amusing themselves in the drawing room before dinner by lolling on sofas and contemplating their pumps. Don't know, apostrophe, replied Mr. Septimus Hicks, who was a tallish, white-faced young man, with spectacles, and a black ribbon round his neck instead of a neckerchief, a most interesting person, a poetical walker of the hospitals, and a very talented young man. Apostrophe, he was fond of lugging into conversation all sorts of quotations from Don Juan, without fettering himself by the propriety of their application, in which particular he was remarkably independent. The other, Mr. Simpson, was one of those young men who are in society what walking gentlemen are on the stage, only infinitely worse skilled in his vocation than the most indifferent artist. He was as empty-headed as the great bell of St. Paul's, always dressed according to the caricatures published in the monthly fashion, and spelt character with a K. I saw a devilish number of parcels in the passage when I came home, apostrophe, simpered Mr. Simpson. Materials for the toilet, no doubt, apostrophe, rejoined the Don Juan reader. Much linen, lace, and several pair of stockings, slippers, brushes, combs, complete, with other articles of ladies' fare, to keep them beautiful, or leave them neat. Apostrophe, is that from Milton? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Simpson. No, from Byron, apostrophe, returned Mr. Hicks, with a look of contempt. He was quite sure of his author, because he had never read any other. Hush! Here come the gals, apostrophe, and they both commenced talking in a very loud key. Apostrophe, Mrs. Mapleson and the Miss Maplesons, Mr. Hicks. Mr. Hicks, Mrs. Mapleson and the Miss Maplesons, apostrophe, said Mrs. Tips, with a very red face, for she had been superintending the cooking operations below stairs, and looked like a wax doll on a sunny day. Apostrophe Mr. Simpson, I beg your pardon Mr. Simpson Mrs. Mapleson, and the Miss Maplesons and vice versa. The gentleman immediately began to slide about with much politeness, and to look as if they wished their arms had been legs, so little did they know what to do with them. The lady smiled, curtsied, and glided in two chairs, and dived for dropped pocket handkerchiefs. The gentleman leant against two of the curtain pegs. Mrs. Tibbs went through an admirable bit of serious pantomime with a servant who had come up to ask some question about the fish sauce, and then the two young ladies looked at each other, and everybody else appeared to discover something very attractive in the pattern of the fender. Julia, my love, apostrophe said Mrs. Mapleson to her youngest daughter, in a tone loud enough for the remainder of the company to hear Julia. Apostrophe, yes, ma. Apostrophe, don't stoop. Apostrophe, this was said for the purpose of directing general attention to Miss Julia's figure, which was undeniable. Everybody looked at her, accordingly, and there was another pause. We had the most uncivil hackney coachman today, you can imagine, apostrophe said Mrs. Mapleson to Mrs. Tibbs, in a confidential tone. Dear me. Apostrophe replied the hostess, with an air of great commiseration. She couldn't say more, for the servant again appeared at the door, and commenced telegraphing most earnestly to her missus. Apostrophe, I think hackney coachmen generally are uncivil, apostrophe said Mr. Hicks in his most insinuating tone. Positively I think they are, apostrophe replied Mrs. Mapleson, as if the idea had never struck her before. And cabman too, apostrophe said Mr. Simpson. This remark was a failure, for no one intimated, by word or sign, the slightest knowledge of the manners and customs of cabmen. Robinson, what do you want? Apostrophe said Mrs. Tibbs to the servant, who, by way of making her presence known to her mistress, had been giving sundry hems and sniffs outside the door during the preceding 5 minutes. Please, ma'am, master wants his clean things, apostrophe replied the servant, taken off her guard. The two young men turned their faces to the window, and went off like a couple of bottles of ginger beer. The ladies put their handkerchiefs to their mouths, and little Mrs. Tibbs bustled out of the room, to give Tibbs his clean linen, and the servant warning. Mr. Calton, the remaining boarder, shortly afterwards made his appearance, and proved a surprising promoter of the conversation. Mr. Calton was a superannuated beau and old boy. He used to say of himself that, although his features were not regularly handsome, they were striking. They certainly were. It was impossible to look at his face without being reminded of a chubby street door knocker, half lion, half monkey, and the comparison might be extended to his whole character and conversation. He had stood still, while everything else had been moving. He never originated a conversation, or started an idea, but if any commonplace topic were broached, or, to pursue the comparison, if anybody lifted him up, he would hammer away with surprising rapidity. He had the tic de la rue occasionally, and then he might be said to be muffled, because he did not make quite as much noise, as at other times, when he would go on prosing, rat-tat-tat the same thing over and over again. He had never been married, but he was still on the lookout for a wife with money. He had a life interest worth about $300 a year. He was exceedingly vain, and inordinately selfish. He had acquired the reputation of being the very pink of politeness, and he walked round the park, and up Regent Street, every day. This respectable personage had made up his mind, to render himself exceedingly agreeable to Mrs. Mapleson. Indeed, the desire of being as amiable as possible extended itself to the whole party, Mrs. Tibbs having considered it an admirable little bit of management, to represent to the gentleman, that she had some reason, to believe the ladies were fortunes, and to hint to the ladies, that all the gentlemen were eligible. Apostrophe a little flirtation, she thought, might keep her house full, without leading to any other result. Mrs. Mapleson was an enterprising widow of about 50. Shrewd, scheming, and good-looking. She was amiably anxious on behalf of her daughters, in proof whereof she used to remark that she would have no objection to marry again, if it would benefit her dear girls she could have no other motive. The dear girls themselves were not at all insensible to the merits of a good establishment. Apostrophe one of them was 25, the other, 3 years younger. They had been at different watering places for 4 seasons. They had gambled at libraries, read books in balconies, sold at fancy fairs, danced at assemblies, talked sentiment. In short, they had done all that industrious girls could do, but, as yet, to no purpose. What a magnificent dresser Mr. Simpson is! Apostrophe apostrophe whispered Matilda Mapleson to her sister Julia. Splendid! Apostrophe apostrophe returned the youngest. The magnificent individual alluded to wore a maroon-colored dress coat, with a velvet collar and cuffs of the same tint, very like that which usually invests the form of the distinguished unknown who condescends to play the swell in the pantomime at Richardson's show. Apostrophe, what whiskers! Apostrophe apostrophe said Miss Julia. Charming! Apostrophe apostrophe responded her sister, and what hair! Apostrophe his hair was like a wig, and distinguished by that insinuating wave which graces the shining locks of those chef d'oeuvres of art surmounting the waxen images in Bartlett's window in Regent Street. His whiskers meeting beneath his chin, seemed strings wherewith to tie it on, ere science had rendered them unnecessary by her patent invisible springs. Dinner's on the table, ma'am, if you please, apostrophe said the boy, who now appeared for the first time, in a revived black coat of his master's. Oh, Mr. Calton, will you lead Mrs. Mapleson? Thank you. Apostrophe Mr. Simpson offered his arm to Miss Julia, Mr. Septimus Hicks escorted the lovely Matilda, and the procession proceeded to the dining room. Mr. Tibbs was introduced, and Mr. Tibbs bobbed up and down to the three ladies like a figure in a Dutch clock, with a powerful spring in the middle of his body, and then dived rapidly into his seat at the bottom of the table, delighted to screen himself behind a soup tureen, which he could just see over, and that was all. The boarders were seated, a lady and gentleman alternately, like the layers of bread and meat in a plate of sandwiches. And then Mrs. Tibbs directed James to take off the covers. Salmon, lobster sauce, giblet soup, and the usual accompaniments were discovered. Potatoes like petrifactions, and bits of toasted bread, the shape and size of blank dice. Soup for Mrs. Mapleson, my dear, apostrophe said the bustling Mrs. Tibbs. She always called her husband my dear before company. Tibbs, who had been eating his bread, and calculating how long it would be before he should get any fish, helped the soup in a hurry, made a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.